Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What happens to special needs children when their parents grow old? An estimated 4.6 million Americans have an intellectual or developmental disability. Nearly 75% live at home with relatives, and they are living longer than ever before. Inevitably, that leaves their families to make some heartrending choices about who will care for their children when elderly parents can no longer do so. Filmmaker Sophie Sartain used her camera to share the stories of her then 92-year-old grandmother Mimi and her disabled aunt Donna when, after six decades by each other's sides, the time had come for mother and daughter to separate. Sophie Sartain's documentary, Mimi and Donna, screens Thursday night at the Angelica Film Center as part of Dallas Video Fest 27. The festival runs through October 19th. Sophie, welcome to Think.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
What motivated you to start shooting this film at the time that you did?
Well, in 2008, my father passed away, and he and my mom lived here in Dallas. And I kind of felt, I live in Los Angeles, so I wanted to kind of have a reason to come to Dallas and to sort of connect with my family more. And my aunt and my grandmother, Mimi and Donna, lived in North Dallas, and they're such characters. And I always was sort of fascinated by their relationship. So I just brought my camera to Dallas and I started filming them. And at the time, I was sort of thinking of it as like a Texas Grey Gardens, mm-hmm. just to kind of capture their sweet life. But we also knew that there was a ticking clock, that Mimi was 92 and that some changes were going to have to happen. So I just started filming and the story became bigger than I initially set out to do.
What specifically was Donna's diagnosis?
Well, she was diagnosed in the 50s with mental retardation. And then later in life had an OCD diagnosis as well. I'm no expert, but I think probably today she might have an autism diagnosis. But it wasn't such a common diagnosis back then.
And, you know, the film really points out the fact that the way that we care for people with intellectual disabilities has changed a lot in half a century, to the extent that whereas once maybe the emphasis would be on sheltering them from the world, today there's more of an interest in helping them engage.
Right, right. I think back when Donna was a little girl, a lot of the recommendations from doctors were to put people like Donna in institutions, which would be sort of outside the community. And I know that since the 60s, there's been a movement to bring people more into the community in group homes and those kind of settings. So things have definitely changed. I mean, I think in terms of Donna's education, that is so different today from what it was then, in the sense that she started school in Dallas Independent School District, and was asked to leave. So after second grade, she was forced out of the public school system and started in private schools. Now today, the situation is quite different, and in fact, the opposite, with the public school systems supporting children who have some kind of disability.
What do you remember about being a kid and going to see your grandmother and then Donna would be there?
Well, we had great times over at their over at their house. And Donna was kind of a playmate of mine growing up. And one of my memories is kind of running around in the backyard at my grandmother's house and catching chameleons. And you know, my grandmother had a pool table with a green felt, you know, the green felt on top, and we'd throw the chameleon on the table and watch it change colors. And, you know, just hung out a lot with them and had a lot of good times. And, you know, there was a point, I don't know what age I was, maybe between 8 and 10, when I realized, oh, Donna's not like other grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking to my mom about it and kind of her explaining to me, you know, the situation.
I think you deal really elegantly with your mother's perspective on all of this. She, like every sibling, loves her sister, occasionally is vexed by her sister, but it's a different sort of layer of complication when that sibling that we love and maybe have problems with is not operating sort of with the same skills and abilities.
Right. I, you know, I set out to make the film about Mimi and Donna and about this relationship and their sort of a love story. And what happened was my mother, who's Donna's sister, over the course of filming became more and more of a character, more of a, and I made a lot of discoveries about her, which I had not expected to do. And just I just have so much admiration and respect for my mom, now sort of understanding how hard it was for her growing up. I mean, she had, you know, a nice childhood, but I think it was very difficult having a sister like Donna at times. And she does represent a lot of the siblings of people with disabilities who often have to overcome difficult childhoods and then end up being the caregivers or the, you know, the people who have to be responsible for the sibling later in life. So I have a lot of respect for her.
And it's not that the parents wish for it to go this way, but sometimes there's quite literally no one else.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. How did Mimi start to understand, I'm guessing years after everyone else started thinking about this, that maybe the time would come for Donna to move somewhere else?
She waited just about as long as possible. Mm-hmm. she just... You know, she's very headstrong and very strong person, and felt like she could always take care of Donna best. That's the way she felt. And you're right that we had, you know, for decades been saying, Mimi, you know, we need to make a plan. We need to make a plan. She didn't. She resisted. And I think it was her minister at her church who sat her down and talked to her and recommended that she, you know, find some options for Donna. And I probably when she was 90, mm-hmm. around that time, 90, 91, she realized, okay, I can't keep up with Donna anymore. And yeah.
And here's, we'll listen to a scene in the film where they're getting ready for bed. And Mimi, your grandmother, wants to sort of do things the way it sounds like they've been doing them for, you know, 55, 60 years. And Donna is kind of focused on something else.
Let me get my purse, Mama.
Not right now.
No, you don't do it. Sit down.
No, Mom. I'll be back.
Do it later.
Donna,
come
on.
I don't want to lose my purse.
That's okay. I'll get her, Mimi. You stay there.
No, I'll get her. You sit down. Of all the things she would do. Donna.
I had to get my purse.
Well, you get yourself in there. You didn't have to have the purse.
I do too, Mother.
We don't usually have the purse when we say our prayers.
That's a scene from Sophie Sartain's documentary, Mimi and Donna, which screens Thursday night at the Angelica Film Center as part of Dallas Video Fest 27. So much going on in that scene. First of all, will you describe Mimi for us physically?
She's about 5'4", but she has arthritis, and so she's sort of bent over a lot and getting pretty frail by this point, mm-hmm. by age 92. So she's chasing after Donna and frustrated, as you could hear in that scene. But she's, you know, she's strong.
So I wondered watching that whether Mimi was also frustrated because this is, you know, she wants to show you how placid and wonderful their life is together. And then Donna is misbehaving in a way that is maybe not unexpected for someone with her challenges. But Mimi's also aware that you're witnessing this.
Yes, exactly. I think she wanted to create a sweet scene for me. And because I was filming, and Donna just had her own ideas, And you could, you know, she just got so frustrated. And the other thing about the scene is that it actually took place the night before we had to move my aunt. Mm. So I think there was just a lot of tension in the house, obviously, that day. And you know, a lot of sadness that this change was coming.
Did Mimi have, was there respite care available? Were there people who could sort of hang out with Donna and give her a break occasionally? Was that something she ever wanted?
Mimi, she did have someone who could come occasionally and help, but she was not very welcoming of having strangers in the house, even someone that she might develop a relationship with. She really wanted to do things herself, so she was resistant to anything like that.
What were their days like together?
Well, they had a great routine. They would get up, they would get dressed, they would clean the house, they would watch Price is Right, do little errands in the neighborhood, and every day religiously at 6:30, Wheel of Fortune. So they kind of had their routine, and it really worked for them for decades.
I also had the sense watching the film that surely Donna needs her mother taking care of her, but and maybe the change had happened gradually, but I got the sense that Mimi needed Donna too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it gave her a purpose, and Donna was her companion, and you know, Donna was very affectionate and a sweet person, and so they had each other, which was nice. And yes, of course, at times it was a burden, but I think Mimi got a lot out of that as well.
What options are available in Texas for adults with intellectual disabilities who can't live at home?
Well, I know we looked at a lot of group homes, and I know that our cousins and different family members took Mimi to a lot of places. There are wait lists. I'm not sure what the current situation is right now with waiting lists. And then there are the option. There was this option of the state-run institutions as well in Texas. So this was what we were looking at with the situation with Donna.
And when people stay state schools, sometimes I think that the vision that maybe pops into people's heads is different from what the reality is.
As a state school, yeah, I think that's what they were first called back in when they were opened. And it's not really a school. It is an assisted living center.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take care of someone for their whole lives.
But it was a place that you found that was it looked welcoming, and it seemed to be that the campus was attractive, that sort of thing.
Right. And it was confusing because, you know, you hear reports in the media about abuses at these institutions. So obviously, you know, you have concerns. And I know that it's a controversial issue here in Texas and in other states as well. So we were not really knowing what to expect when we first went and saw the place. And as my mom says in the film, they were really surprised by how nice it was and what it could potentially provide for Donna.
We're speaking this hour with documentary filmmaker Sophie Sartain. Her film Mimi and Donna screens Thursday night at the Angelica Film Center as part of Dallas Video Fest 27. The festival itself runs through October 19th. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education with courses in art, culture, history, communication, photography, and film studies. Registration online at smu.edu/think.
You You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with filmmaker Sophie Sartain. Her documentary, Mimi and Donna, screens Thursday night at the Angelica Film Center as part of Dallas Video Fest 27. The festival runs through October 19th. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372, email think at kera.org, or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think. How did Mimi try to prepare Donna for the move?
Well, I know they had lots of conversations, as we all did with Donna, and it was kind of hard for Donna to grasp it. I mean, I think she rejected the idea of having to move, just basically said, "No, I'm not doing it." And so we tried to have lots of conversations with her, and it's hard to know. It kind of sunk in, but we're not so sure.
What do you think about if you went off and lived in a home with a bunch of other people?
I wouldn't live in a bunch of homes. I'd live here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what if you got to go to live a place where they had lots of fun things to do?
I wouldn't want to.
Lots of activities.
I know, but I wouldn't want to. I'm too old to go there now. I'm 64.
You think you're too old?
Uh-huh.
I don't think you're too old.
I am.
But you don't look 64.
I am 64.
Another cut from the documentary, Mimi and Donna. We're speaking with filmmaker Sophie Sartain. Another scene that I love because it's multi-layered. On the one hand, you're just trying to document here how Donna is processing all this. I was left wondering whether you were thinking, is she too old at 64? Is it impossible for her to make this transition?
Right, right. At the time, we absolutely were concerned about that. But we had hopes that she would be able to adjust. I mean, she was very vivacious and outgoing, an active person. In hindsight, she probably was too old mm-hmm. to make that change, and ideally it would have come earlier, I think, for her.
You were talking to, I think it was one of your brothers who has an autistic son himself, and his sense, I didn't get the sense that he was criticizing your grandmother, but he was saying, you know, it's really important to help cultivate independence and a sense that this won't last forever in a dependent special needs child. And that was very interesting to me because there's this sense that what is playing out with Mimi and Donna could maybe reflect the future for other people in the family.
Exactly, exactly. My brother Keith is wonderful. A wonderful father. He has four kids, and his oldest is William, who has autism. And William just turned 23 last week. So Keith and his wife, they live in Maryland, and you know, these are issues that they will be facing as well with William. And Keith is in the film. He's the sweetest guy, and he really voices, I think, what a lot of parents of children like William and Donna feel, which is, he says very honestly, sometimes I think I just have to outlive him, which then he knows, obviously, that that's, Keith, of all people, he's an actuary. So of all people, he knows the odds of that.
Highly unlikely. Yeah. Yeah.
He's talking about Mimi and Donna, but I almost feel like he's giving himself a bit of a pep talk, like about the need to foster independence and to, he talks about parents who take that very difficult step and have to kind of push their child out of the house, and it works out well. So it's almost like he's giving himself a pep talk at the same time that he's discussing the current situation we were in at the time.
And meanwhile, as you were making this film, you and your partner had taken your own son,
yes,
to test for what you thought looked like signs of autism.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was, also one of my windows into the story. And I say that in the film is that I had concerns about my own son, and was wondering, as Mimi was, you know, if I was beginning a journey that Mimi was about to end with my own child. And he's actually, he did get an autism spectrum disorder diagnosis during the course of my filming the film. And his, you know, all, his situation is different, but definitely Mimi and Donna's situation resonated with me on that level as well.
And you actually, there's a scene in the car where you're talking about this, and it just seems so emotional. And I think in the moment that we learn these things, even if we've expected them, they hit us in a different way. But did you know that you were going to include this scene, or did you think, let's just tape this and we can always decide to set it aside?
Yeah. That was actually the last scene that was put in the film, and it was not in the film in the rough cuts and for a long time, and because for me it was so personal and emotional that I hesitated to put it in there, and I actually hid it from my editor. And when I actually showed it to him, he said, "I can't believe you've had this scene all along and I haven't seen it."
Yeah.
And so we talked it through, and my goal, you know, with the film was just to try to be as honest as possible. And so we did make the decision to include it.
And yet, I guess as a mother, there's a part of you, there's a part of all of us that has to be sort of deliberately not so honest with ourselves, you know, and believe that everything's going to be fine. And it sounds like your son, I want to be clear, has a very bright future ahead. But there's a part of us that wants to sort of hold ourselves, suspend ourselves in this kind of disbelief that anything could be less than perfect for our children.
Exactly. So, I think I've grown as a parent to him over the years, and you know, when you first get that diagnosis, it can be scary. You don't really know what it means, what your future is going to look like, but then you know you sort of have to get past that, and you have to look at your child, and he's wonderful. He's so bright. He's got so many gifts, and he has a lot of services available to him, actually, that Donna didn't have available to her when she was a child.
So your whole family seems on board and really open to the process of this documentary. I wonder, though, for someone of Mimi's generation, she is, I want to be clear to everyone who has not yet seen the film, sharp as a tack, smart, funny. But was there anything that, did she find it intrusive, or, you know, someone who maybe wasn't sort of raised on documentaries and is not part of the era of reality TV, how did she feel about what was sort of, you know, putting her business out for the world to see?
Well, she she would not have allowed other people in to film. So I personally had to be the one filming. I had a lot of conversations with her trying to explain what a documentary was, actually. Mm-hmm. and she sort of understood, and I would say, Mimi, I think that so many families go through what we're going through right now, that I want to document this. I want to, you know, try to create a story out of it, and it might help families. And so she agreed. But I'm not quite sure she completely understood what a documentary is ever. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, Channel 13, they have documentaries and it's real people. And she said, oh, well, like Lawrence Welk, because they love to watch the Lawrence Welk show. And I said, well, but yes, but these are real life stories with real people. And
no dancing.
Right. So she sort of understood. And the thing that was so amazing about Mimi and Donna both as subjects from a filmmaking point of view is that they really had no sense of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
They were very natural, which was, as a filmmaker, that's a real gift.
So we see a really dramatic physical and mental change in Donna in the months I mean, you were there when she was dropped off, and then a few months later you returned. Mm-hmm. Can you just describe how she had changed and what your first glance felt like?
Right. We watched her over the course of about 6 months decline. I think when she first moved to Denton, to the Denton State School, she did well, actually. And we were very relieved. We thought, oh, this is exactly what we wanted. She was thriving. And she actually got a series of infections, urinary tract infections, and her condition, she just kind of went downhill. And there were several things going on, but it was alarming to see the change. And I think she would have had a rough time in any new setting. And so about 6 months into her stay, she got an Alzheimer's diagnosis, which was very hard to hear. And also, in hindsight, again, we missed the signs, the early signs of that in the time leading up to the move.
Before she left home.
Yeah. We sort of, in the family, assumed, oh, Mimi's getting older. She can't care for Donna. But actually now in hindsight, we could see that Donna was changing and becoming more difficult and probably in the early stages before the move even.
That didn't, of course, make the early, the moment that Mimi and Donna really separated any easier. And we'll listen to that scene.
Oh, this is hard.
I know it is now.
I don't think I can
here.
Take her.
Yes.
I just take her back home.
No. No, we're going to put Donna. You cannot care for Donna anymore.
I can take her.
We're going to go.
Let's just take her home.
No, we're not going to.
I don't want to. I don't want to. Y'all are making it harder on me.
You are making it harder.
I can't imagine what it was like to be in the car for that and see this woman that you love, who is a strong 92, but 92 experiencing so much anguish.
Mm-hmm. That was very, very hard. My grandmother was so stoic and such a strong person. To see her kind of fall apart like that was very difficult. And to think, you know, at age 92, she has an empty nest,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
which is pretty unusual. For me, filming that, it was sort of surreal. But in some ways, the camera was like a shield for me,
mm-hmm.
because I kind of hid behind the camera in that scene and just kept going. But it also sort of shielded me from, you know, this, you know, feeling so sad in the moment.
How long did it take her to adjust?
Mimi or Donna?
Mimi.
Oh, well, she really had a hard time that first month.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was over there constantly. We were very worried about her, talking to her every day. But she sort of after about a month, when she went back to see Donna and she saw that Donna was okay, she kind of started to accept it more. And we in the family were really worried about Mimi, that she would fall apart with the separation. But she actually rebounded and then kind of was okay.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Robin in Plano. Hi, Robin.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
This is a wonderful topic. I am doing some work in this area in North Texas, and there are 97,000 adults in the DFW area that have challenges that will prevent them from living with their families forever, because they have intellectual and developmental disabilities, and their parents are becoming ill, aging in, passing away. And I wonder what ideas you might have on how to create awareness in our community for this population and the need for more housing, more supported, safe, affordable housing in North Texas.
Thanks so much for your call.
Wow, that's an amazing statistic that you just said. I wasn't aware of that, but I did. You know, as I was making the film, the more I would tell people about it, the more I would hear similar stories, and that is, I mean, the film itself, I hope, raises awareness about this situation that so many families are facing. And I would hope it would encourage more support for these families. I think if we could have used a little bit more support, I think, and guidance throughout the process.
It's hard, too, because families aren't always on the same page. Even though everyone, in a general sense, wants the best for everybody involved. And you're candid about your late father really getting crosswise with Mimi in terms of trying to, it sounds like he was trying to just assess the situation, but it was very hurtful.
Well, I think... Yeah, this is another thing that happens in families is that there are different personalities and different points of view about what should be done in these situations. And my father, who had the biggest heart, he sort of, I guess it was a misunderstanding about Donna that dated back to 1968.
Mm-hmm. When your grandfather died.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it as I said in the film, it really there was tension around the subject of Donna from that point on, and I think that's very common that happens within families when one person thinks this and one person thinks the other, and so I tried to show that as well, the different sides of that.
Your father was worried that your mother would be burdened, forgive the expression, with her sister's care.
Right. He was so protective of my mother always. So I think that's where his concern was coming from.
We're speaking this hour with filmmaker Sophie Sartain. Her documentary, Mimi and Donna, screens Thursday night at the Angelica Film Center as part of Dallas Video Fest. Join us at 1-800-933-5372. We'll return in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education with courses in art, culture, history, communication, photography, and film studies. Registration online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with filmmaker Sophie Sartain about her documentary Mimi and Donna. It screens Thursday night at the Angelica Film Center as part of Dallas Video Fest 27. The festival runs through October 19th. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372. And that's where we find Gagan on the line in Dallas. Hi, Gagan.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I've had the privilege of meeting Donna and Mimi through the dental office that I worked in. And we always looked so forward to Donna coming in. And she just gave us such a joy, gave us such a new perspective on our lives and others' lives. And it was just totally unexpected. We did not know exactly how the office visit was going to go, but she made it absolutely delightful every time. And Mimi was such a support for her. So I just enjoyed hearing this program, and I'm going to come to the movie.
Well, thanks so much for your call.
That's great. Oh, that makes me smile. I'm so happy to hear that. Donna, yeah, Donna's she's a character, and she's a lot of fun.
They both seem like easy people to love, which has got to have been helpful to both of them over the years.
Yeah, I think they had a great life, a lot of friends. I mean, and sort of in a small little world that they lived in, they had Mimi's good friend Tony Trent was a dance instructor who would teach ballroom dancing classes out of her garage, sort of a converted garage she had in the house. And so they would constantly have people over at the house for dance lessons. And I think for my grandmother, it was really nice to have that and to have those interactions.
That was like a little Easter egg within the movie that, that your grandmother had this side to her life, this little pocket of her life that maybe was a break from the challenges of caring for someone.
Right, right. She loved to dance and did a lot of dancing with Tony at different showcases around Dallas. And I do think it was a nice release, and I liked having that in the film. I also liked showing her at a younger age because I found some old VHS tapes of her dancing, and it was nice to see her. Actually, at that point, she would have been about 70, so it wasn't like she was a young woman, but she was still so active and vibrant.
I like the peeks inside the room that Donna had at Mimi's house because it's pretty clear that she is much loved. The room is nicely kept. Her bedspread and the draperies look like they've been there maybe since the mid-70s. Like she's frozen in time in some ways.
Right. The whole house was like a time capsule.
Mm-hmm.
And a very, very cool time capsule. And they moved into that house. They actually built that house, my grandmother and grandfather, in 1953 in the Dallas suburbs. So they probably decorated it in the mid to late 50s, and it really didn't change much. she was a very comfortable house. And for me growing up, it was sort of it was a touchstone for me as a place where we would go.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak now to Angel in Plano. Hi, Angel.
Oh, hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment. Wonderful show. Wanted to comment that it's wonderful to hear about the filmmaker's family and how it seems like everybody rallied to help Donna. And I really think that's not necessarily a given in situations like this. Having a disabled family member, developmentally or mentally disabled family member, can really polarize families, can also unfortunately destroy families.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't, it sounds like there were some conflicts about care, but it doesn't sound at all like the filmmaker's situation. And in fact, the filmmaker was very privileged to have a stable situation from which to observe her aunt. It didn't seem like there were economic traumas or survival traumas.
Well, tell us about that, Sophie.
I agree that I was privileged in that way. And obviously, it was a very tough situation for us, but I know that it could have been worse. Absolutely. Mimi was such a loving parent to Donna for decades, and that kind of set the tone for all of us, I think. But as you said, yes, there were conflicts, there were differences of opinions, but I think there was just that love in the family that kind of prevailed, I like to think, in the end.
When things were getting challenging for Mimi and caring for Donna, who was most likely to be aware of that? Was it your mother? Was she still living in the area at the time that the move was imminent?
Right. Definitely my mother. And there's Mimi's nephew, Daryl, and his wife Jerry, who are in the film.
Mm-hmm.
They are also very close to Mimi and very helpful with Mimi. So I think those, my cousins Daryl and Jerry and my mom, the three of them could sort of see that the situation was getting worse and something needed to be done.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Paul on the line now in Louisville. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Chris. Thanks for the show. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
My heart goes out to all the families that have to deal with these issues, and I'm very grateful to your guests for raising awareness of this issue. My son is one of the 97,000 that was mentioned in that previous statistic. He's in the Denton State Supported Living Center. At 13 months, he was diagnosed with autism and epilepsy. And so he never really developed past that point. He's now 20 years old, and it is a huge burden on the family. But when we were able to get him into the system, there was a tremendous amount of support that we received from Collin County at that time through LifePath systems, and the school districts were really helpful and supportive in trying to meet his needs. But it just got to a point where he was kind of a danger to himself and to others around him, and we had to do something. We tried group homes, and those failed miserably. So he's been in the State Supported Living Center for several years now, and just a tremendous experience. They are so good to him and take such good care. And I know potential for abuse exists, but we have never seen any indication of that taking place. So.
Paul, thank you so much for your call and for sharing your story. And I'm glad to hear that things seem to have worked out well for your son. Sophie, Paul's call, you know, reminds us that even when things turn out as well as they possibly could, there's a fair amount of sorrow in these situations.
Absolutely. And I'm was very happy to hear that Paul's experience has been good. And absolutely, any time that you have to move a family member like this, it's going to create sorrow. But then when you hear stories of these individuals doing well in these settings, it helps.
Yeah. And visits are possible when you have a loved one in these facilities. How do those work?
For us, we can go anytime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no restrictions.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phone to Corbin in Denton. Hey, Corbin.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good, good.
Go right ahead, please.
I was just calling because I actually work at the Denton State Supported Living Center, and I just wanted to say thank you to the filmmaker for sort of giving a voice in the media to some of the compassion that actually does happen in the state schools. It was very difficult for me to choose to work there because I had learned about a lot of controversy of abuses there, but since I began working there, I've seen so much compassion towards all the individuals that live there, and it just really astonished me. So I just wanted to again say that I appreciate somebody in the media sort of giving a voice to that when it's such a controversial issue.
Thank you. Thanks.
What kinds of plans do you think we need to make as a society for providing resources, whether people are going to keep their relatives at home forever or whether they need alternate living arrangements? I mean, it sounds like everybody who ends up in a good place feels very lucky that they've found it, as opposed to having confidence that the right situation will present itself.
Right. Well, I'm no expert in this area, but these are very difficult decisions that have to be made, and it is an aging population. I mean, just as we've got this baby boomer population entering these retirement years, it's these people with intellectual and developmental disabilities are living longer than ever before. And they're facing these situations all the time. I don't have any kind of agenda or you know, advice, but I do hope that through the film, we can foster awareness about this situation and point up the need for support for these families. And you know, I know that in a lot of states they have transition services in place for younger people with autism and other disabilities to sort of transition from, say, out of when they age out of the school systems mm-hmm. around age 21, 22. And to me, it seems like – and that's wonderful to have those services in place. But it would seem like if you could extend those to later – you know, to older individuals, I think that could be helpful.
Because the need doesn't go away for
exactly.
someone who's profoundly disabled.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly.
What was screening like for members of your family? Did you send off DVDs and just wait for the call, or did you all watch together?
We watched together. Mm-hmm. About a year ago, I had a rough cut, and I came to Dallas to show my family. And, I was so nervous.
Yeah.
I was mostly nervous about my mother mm-hmm. because she's a very private person. And I know that it was, you know, going into a lot of personal stuff with her. And but I was also excited to show her. So we did a little screening at my brother's house. And it went over very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a big hurdle for me, and just to sort of get the family's blessing and get them behind the project. And then I actually showed it to my own kids
mm-hmm.
Just a few weeks ago. And I have twins who just turned 10 years old. So I sort of waited to show them, and I also wanted to sort of prepare my son to say, "You're." He actually heard me working on it one time, talking about another family member with autism, and he said, "Well, I have autism. Can I be in your movie?" I said, "Actually, you are in the movie, mm-hmm. and I'd like for you to see it." And I explained to him that before he saw the movie, I said, "You know, when we found out your autism diagnosis, we were scared. We didn't really understand what it would mean. So you'll see me in the film being scared at first, but now, you know, we know that, you know, you can do anything," and, you know, sort of giving him a pep talk about that. So I had to sort of prep him, but then I showed it to the kids and they liked it.
That must have been the most, I mean, in some ways the most gratifying of all, because you're linking these generations.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, there is a lot of autism in my family, so it does ripple through the generations. And it's very heartening, the situation with my son. You know, it's really amazing that Donna had to leave the public school system in second grade, and we actually shifted my son into the public school system in second grade because of all the services that were provided for him. So that shows how much our world has changed.
Filmmaker Sophie Sartain directed the documentary Mimi and Donna. It screens Thursday night at the Angelica Film Center as part of Dallas Video Fest 27. The festival itself runs through October 19th. Sophie, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.